Hey, got the morning show with Aaron and Natalie's in the studio. We're just trying to organise the microphone here. I thought that would be like having it lowered down.
It looks
would
really
be
professional, but I was like, what it looks like? I don't know. Anyway,
well, it looks like it was coming to get you. See, I was interviewed on Wednesday, and I sat in that chair, and it was a very slightly surreal experience. And I was like, oh, that thing's just in my face. I'm going to like bring it down here like this.
There you go.
But then I just did that with you, and you're like,
oh, it feels like it was about to like bop me in the end of the nose.
Yeah, well, which is not the effect we're going for. But I know you're comfortable with the microphone, Natalie.
Yes, I am.
So Natalie's had had coffee, and she's rushing late. So the first piece of advice,
rush day.
I like the advice you said just now before we went on air, which is
pre-interview prep. Never drink coffee or smoke cigarettes because they produce cortisone in your system and it makes you stressed.
And now we're talking about job interviews.
Yes, we are. Well, we're going to talk about job search strategy. So I suppose interview preparation is part of that, right?
Yeah. So don't have coffee just before the interview. And what about if you're like really tired?
Oh, maybe. Maybe like do some star jumps or something, get the blood flowing, before. I don't know, maybe not star jumps, I don't know. If you're really tired before a job interview, I suppose it's quite a bit of a challenge.
Walk to the interview.
Yeah.
Get the blood pumping.
Slap yourself around the face. Sorry, I don't recommend that either, but.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
It might be wake up.
Yeah.
Sorry, Aaron. Oh, dear.
So we're doing, but what was the topic today generally?
Well, I thought it would be really good to sort of review the concept of a job search strategy. And I don't mean part-time Hamilton. That's not a job search strategy. That's an avalanche of 2,000 job adverts that you'll have to wade through that will erode your confidence and your energy levels.
But at the moment, it's kind of easy to get jobs.
It's still a competitive market.
Depends what you're going for. There's some jobs that...
Yeah, you know, lots of seasonal work's coming available because obviously we're getting closer to summer. So there'll be those jobs that are, all of a sudden experiencing higher demand, like hospitality potentially.
I think for the last year, you've been able to get a job in hospitality in Raglan any day you wanted it.
for me, I think that successful employment is meaningful. So yes, you could be... we are experiencing what they consider to be a skill shortage, which is really a human being shortage when it comes to the job search. So but it's still competitive because employers still want somebody, so think of it like this. A job advert is created because an organization has a problem, right? And they want somebody, an employee, to solve that problem.
Yeah.
So the employers still have a set of expectations that they want that employer to meet. So while we sort of go, it's really easy to get a job. Well, it might be easy to get a job, but it's not necessarily easy for employers to find the right employees to solve the problems that they have. So you still have to go through a process. And I believe when you're looking at employment, it's a 50-50 kind of split in that scenario. You are coming to that organization to find out if they are right for you, and you, the employer is interviewing you to find out if you're right for that organization. Even with regards to the, the seasonal work that we've been talking about, you think about the fact that berry picking and asparagus picking have all come into season now, so they're looking for people and you can find employment doing that. But you still have to do the job. You are there and you are employed for a purpose. So you have to make sure that you're prepared to fulfill that purpose.
But if the prospective employee and an employer are both desperate to get a person in a position...
Well, then that's a mutual meeting, isn't it? Really, realistically, yeah.
They're just going to go for it.
Well, hopefully.
But you're advising to work out whether it's actually the relationship's going to work out.
Yeah. Because 2 weeks down the line, do you want to be the employer that's having to re-look for an employee because the one that you had kind of was like, yeah, I'll do any job. And then they cut to that job and went, oh my goodness, this is not for me.
I guess it depends on levels of desperation. If you've got fruit and veggies that need to be picked today, you'll take anyone.
Yep.
And if you have to rehire 2 weeks later, that's still a win probably.
Yeah, well, it's that constant revolving door. But again, those industries have sort of established that understanding so that they work towards that process, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, when I think about job search strategy, maybe I'm not necessarily thinking about the seasonal employment that we've just discussed, because like you say, that is filled by lots of different people for lots of different reasons. But when I think about job search strategy, I'm thinking probably more along the lines of the permanent employment or fixed term employment for another example of that. And I've been working a lot with a lot of people that are getting to this sort of the final part of this year, and they're going, I'm not sure when I look into 2023 that I want to be doing this, but I don't know what it is I want to be doing. I know I don't want to study, but I want to change my job. And I'm, you know, I'm talking with people who've had 20-year careers in one profession that are pivoting out and into another one. And they kind of go, I've been looking for jobs. And I say to them, how do you do that? And they go, well, I put in my region and then I put in full time and I sit for 3 hours trolling through like every single job there is. And by the end of it, I realized like I'm completely unemployable and there's nothing I can do. And I've got zero confidence and zero energy. And my eyeballs hurt from looking at a screen for too long. And I go, okay, well, that's not an effective job search strategy. So for
clearly.
Me, yeah, clearly. So what we're looking at.
Sorry, I'm just going to put my, you've got your sunglasses on.
I know,
so
but you
have
to understand, like, I'm super blind. Okay. So like when I'm walking down the street, my sunglasses on, it's because they're like, proper big prescription, and if I didn't have them on, I'd have to get my little white stick out.
But if you're looking cool while we're doing that,
I reckon this, if you could see us now, we're like, we are definitely ripping up the cool.
This is very bright behind you, so it helps.
It's my halo.
Yeah, so what were we? No.
That's the one that's fallen around my neck and is choking me.
I can't see that anymore. Put sunglasses on.
There you go. But yeah, what were we talking about? Job search strategy. So for me, what I work with people to establish are their sort of their motivators. You know, what is it that you want to be doing? You know, what are you good at? And I'm not saying like, oh, I'm really good at making a coffee. That's definitely an employable skill. But, you know, for a lot of people, they'll say, well, I'm really good at problem solving. I'm really good at building relationships with people. I'm really good at communication, processing information. And so we kind of look at these key factors. And then the umbrella that, you know, what do you want to do in your future job? So, for example, I'm working with a gentleman at the moment that's coming out of his industry, and he's tried to come out of this industry before, and he went from his profession into project management, which was a very natural progression from that job.
Yep.
But the sense of dissatisfaction he got in that role was even greater than the one that he was experiencing in his trade, right?
Do we need to ask the question, what do you want out of your life, not just out of your job?
I think, you know, when you look at that, yes, absolutely, because it's sort of about that reward factor in employment, right? And again, we are talking about this long-term, not long-term employment, but permanent employment, because actually there's an awful lot of satisfaction that comes from seasonal employment as well. But when we're thinking about it, it is like, so when you look into your future, what do you want from work? Yes, income. Yes, teamwork. Some people say, I don't want to work with team. I want to work autonomously. So there's all these different factors that come into play. And my suggestion is you just kind of start writing it down. And then you put them in a particular order. Like, what is the most important out of all of these things? The other thing to consider are your values. You know, so when you're looking at who you want to be working for, what are the values of that with regards to the meaning of it for you? And so some people will say, well, I really like community work, or I want to work in the agricultural sector. I want to work in corrections. So it's all about sort of looking at what you want to do and then who you want to do it with. And then you use those particular phrases and terminology to start your key search as opposed to part-time. And then location. Is that making sense? So you're pulling up all the job adverts that potentially have got the term problem solving in them.
So you've filtered it.
You filter it in a slightly different way. Yep. And then from there, you're knowing that potentially before you even apply for that job, there are components in the job advert that you go, yep, I can do all of those things. And when you're pivoting, so when we think about what a pivot in employment really means, it's leaving one focus of employment to move to another. And adults in sort of our modern employment sector will pivot their role 7 to 8 times throughout their working life. That's not changing a job. That's changing your employment perspective. So, you know, a dental nurse moving into hospitality, from somebody moving out of hospitality into administration, like we're changing what you do for a job completely. And that's in the modern employment world, 7 to 8 times.
But there's transferable skills 100%. From those.
And that's what you're looking at, right?
Right.
So if I can do this is, and the job I have done is evidence of me doing that, it backs up my capability. If I can do it for one organization, I can move to another organization with another employment focus and do it there too. So that's part of that job search strategy. But then what you also have is something that underpins the skills, the transferable skills that you'll be highlighting in your skills profile section of your CV.
So you started off by talking about someone you know who was looking for work, and they just put in the region and full-time work and
got which is very common.
Overwhelmed by...
Well, yeah, I mean, on average...
So what did you say to them? Is this
stop
the sort
doing
of thing?
That.
But the advice you've just said here, is that the sort of thing you said to them?
So, you know, when I'm working with people, and again, like, remember this project that I'm working through is open to all New Zealanders up and down the country. You don't have to work with me. There's 40 different career professionals that are running the Direct Career Guidance Service. We all have a sort of a process that's been established, a framework, which we use to help people understand their current situation. And so for me, I use a model called CREATE, and it's coaching methodology, but we really look at what's currently, like, the current reality, what's going on, what do you enjoy, what do you hate? There's a lot to be said for the things you don't want to do, because that's one side of the coin, right? So if I don't like this, does it mean that you like that? So we're able to really explore, and that's the next stage of the coaching model, exploring alternatives. Mm. And then you tap into the energy of that to create plans for yourself, you know, whether they're immediate or into the future. So we all, as career practitioners, have a set of guidelines we use to help the individual to understand their situation. And then we will use those sort of knowledge, that new understanding, to help to plan for the future of your job search or your career, as it were. Yeah, simple.
So I've just gone through the process of interviewing election candidates.
Nice.
Trying to elicit information that gives people a chance to really understand if they're going to be good if they're going to be good at the job.
Yeah.
And it's not, and I don't think I necessarily did. I don't think I did a good enough job.
Mm. Like, Aaron.
Well, no, because I'm
public,
like,
critique. Did you ask for feedback?
The thing is, because some people did. Okay, well, so I'm only reaching a small part of the potential voting audience, but there are some people who had quite serious shortcomings in certain ways who've been successful, and it's like, and I'm just been thinking, how do I communicate the important stuff through this whole process? Okay. And I'm thinking with these kind of interviews, job interviews, it's the same thing's happening. You're really trying to find out, I mean, you're trying to find out, if you're an employee, you're trying to find out whether your employer's got some integrity, you know, that sort of thing, and vice versa too as well. If your potential staff member's going to have integrity, if they're going to be honest, reliable, and it's really hard to suss that stuff out.
Yeah. A great tool I use, and a term I use quite often in the questioning, I suppose, is, can you give me an example of that? You know, tell me more. And I think, you know, for me, I'm looking for self-understanding. That's the encouragement that the engagement somebody will have with me. It's a better understanding of self. Whereas you're looking at that, maybe not educating the individual, because they're coming to this situation with an understanding that they are the right person for the role, right? So for your sort of questioning, I suppose it would be about, well, it's the same kind of thing, right? So can you give us an example of that so that the listeners can understand your skills and capabilities more?
Yeah.
Presenting back, paraphrasing, the sun's gone in, so my halo is less blinding.
I just took my sunglasses off now. Feels kind of weird.
But, you know, presenting that information back can be a really useful way of the speaker to get clarity on what it is they're saying, because I don't actually often think we hear what we say. And when you're working with a coach or a career practitioner, their job isn't to put information in. It's their job to bring information out, and that information is for you as the individual to understand yourself more. Does that make sense? Like, it's about personal clarity. And I think that what you're talking about maybe is a similar sort of scenario, but we're expecting others outside of that individual to hear and understand that message, which is a similar sort of thing to a job interview. What you've done is potentially interviewed the candidates on behalf of the employers.
I can't hear. Oh, actually, was job. Yeah, was doing job interviews. Like 100%.
So we.
I should have talked to you first.
Yeah, we as the what do we call it? Like community members, or you know, the
voters.
Voters. Yeah. We are employing. We are part of the employment process for these candidates.
Mm,
so
very
I
much.
Suppose it's about saying, you know, if we were to have somebody who is a voice and a representative for us as a community and an individual, what are we wanting from this person? And then, likewise, for an employee. There's this really great sketch on this program I watched, and it was like, it's a comedy program, and the head, we were interviewing people for a job, and it was it wasn't a panel interview, but there were two people that were conducting the interviews, and every single time a new candidate came through the doors, one of the interviewers took on a completely different persona and was like, you know, they were like acting the whole time, like, it was really, and it was markedly different, and that was part of the comedy sketch, obviously. And at the end, the second interviewer said to him, why are you doing that? And they were like, well, if this person can't handle me being like that, how are they going to handle Barry on a, you know, Thursday morning when the game, when their his team's lost the game, or such and such on a Monday morning when they come in after like spending too long doing whatever they're doing on the weekend, you know? So when we think about a job interview, firstly, if you're there, it's because you can do the job. So what you're looking for, both parties, is can you go to that place of work every day? Can you be a member of that team and be the one that can work with all the different idiosyncrasies of and complexities of teamwork? And when we think about diversity and inclusion in the workplace, like, we actually do want somebody who can handle Barry on a Monday morning after his games, you know, the rugby's lost on a Sunday, or whatever that
maybe
dynamic
Barry
might
needs
be.
To have a meeting with HR.
Well, maybe HR's too frightened of Barry. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that, actually, that thing about being frightened, because if I was being critical of my interviews, maybe I wasn't tough enough or confrontational enough about things.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And as in a job interview situation, you do have to confront those issues rather than deal with them 5 weeks later. You know.
I mean, for me, being an import to New Zealand, I do have a perception that maybe is a little biased. I don't know. I think there's a culture in New Zealand where potentially your understanding of what confrontation is quite different to my understanding of what confrontation is. I mean, I come from a part of the UK where there's a line in a song, and anybody that will know it will say that having the last word is the pastime. Like, having the last say in the conversation is part of it, right? So our form of confrontational communication is probably quite different to the culture that exists within New Zealand. And so for me, I would never say it's confrontation. I always encourage people to have courageous conversations.
It's a bit of
work,
yeah.
Because asking something that is, as an employee, intrinsic to you, understanding what it means for you to go to work and be part of it and go back after the tough days, if you're able to establish it, potentially that is something that can happen right at the beginning, then I think, you know, it's worth having a courageous conversation as opposed to a confrontational one, because, you know, that conjures up in the mind that maybe there's anger involved, maybe these more difficult emotions to accept.
I think it's just that sense you've got to confront some issues.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to know whether the employee or employer, whichever side you're on, is a person of integrity, you're going to have to ask some kind of questions.
100%. You know,
and you really and you want to know.
Can you give me some example? Well, what, you know, first off, it's unpacking the, what does the actual time integrity mean to you as the individual that's employing somebody? What do those examples?
Yeah, because you can't say, have you got integrity? That's a waste of time.
Well, that's right.
And weird question.
You know, so, you know, when you've got to be, you know, what does that mean? What are you looking for when you're wanting somebody with integrity? So are you saying, have you ever had extra responsibilities at work that you might have committed to that are outside of your job? Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I worked with a young lady recently who, again, was pivoting out of her current role into something quite different. I think definitely going to be a successful pivot because the values of working with people, being supportive, you know, enabling others to make changes in their life, those were things she identified as being core values and motivators in herself. So the job she was applying for was something that would sit well within that. I've lost my chain of thought. Where am I going with this?
We're trying to find out if the person on the other side of the desk got integrity.
For her, integrity was something that it was stated in the job advert. So you've got to match that up. And I was like, what does that term mean to you? She said, well, I used to open and close the shop. So, you know, where she was working wasn't the shop, but she had the key. So she opened and closed that. And at the time she was employed, that wasn't her role. But because they'd recognized that she was somebody that was always on time and if not a little bit before, and we're kind of happily, yeah, I can take that on and I can do that. And her behavior repeatedly supported the values of honesty and trustworthiness and all of those things. She was able to example that she was given extra responsibility very shortly after employment by having the keys to somewhere that, you know,
yeah,
was sort of, you know, a very trustworthy part of her job. So giving me examples, and that's something that I encourage people to do. When you think about that in a job search, like how do you include examples of you being in, having integrity and exampling integrity in the workplace? Scrap duties in your work history. If you have a generic role that people have a pretty good understanding of what that role is, then include achievements instead. So we don't describe what you did for the employer. You describe what you did for the employer. Does that make sense? Something you're proud of, something you received recognition for. Because you, if you're including a skills
like section, I was the first person to do this in this business, or I pushed this further than anyone else had.
Yeah, you know, I received recognition for my attendance and for my attitude with the clients or with the customers. And, you know, when you sort of tap into people a little bit more, that kind of people receive, that happens in work, and people don't know how to, again, this is a very cultural thing in New Zealand, like they don't want to be boastful or
you have to leave that at the door when you go to a job interview.
You don't want to, like, well, actually, the other part of it is if in your in a job interview you don't share that kind of information, how will the interviewers know? So it's not being boastful. It's if you're able to provide examples of you exceeding expectations, for want of a better term, then you, it is the absolute place to talk about your capabilities.
But you've got to, it's not so much about not being boastful. It's just not playing down things. You've got to stop that, because that's the New Zealand way. You've got to play it down.
Yeah, 100%. Well, because, you know, because we don't want to be the ones that blow our own trumpet. And we've all heard of that derogatory term of tall poppy syndrome. But those kind of things don't exist in a job interview. You have to be open and honest with your potential employer to ensure that they are going to get the real version of you. And, you know, this is the other thing that I talk about quite a lot. Like, we, if you consider yourself to be a cake, right?
Okay, just for you, just Natalie, for me, I'll consider myself to be a cake.
Be a cake. There's lots of different ingredients in that cake. And we divide that cake up, right? And it's part of that cake is professionalism. So when you think about how you are going to work, it is that slice of professionalism, the professional self, that needs to go to work. So whilst you as the entire person goes to work, let yourself, the employee, pass through the gate of professionalism so that you can then represent yourself as an employee as opposed to a human being. Because yes, the human being goes to work, but you are employed to do a set of skills, a set of duties, in utilizing a set of skills. So to ensure that you are also able, I believe, to maintain the correct kind of equilibrium at work and at home, you need to pass through the gate of professionalism both ways.
Yeah, psychologically.
Yeah, that's it. So maybe cake wasn't the best analogy, but that was just like the makeup of all the different ingredients.
Oh, we get it.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was like hopefully as clear as mud and as useful as a sieve in a rainstorm. But if you
I feel it was better than that. I think we achieved a little more than that.
Well, it was like super. And also I was a bit late, which is something I don't really enjoy being. I don't enjoy feeling rushed. So
very bad for an interview.
Well, I reckon. What do you do in a job interview when you are late? You apologize profusely and say, this is not my normal MO. I'm sorry. But
you apologize, but don't go over the top.
No.
Don't spend the whole interview apologizing.
No, and definitely don't go to the job interview with the coffee in your hand that made you late. That's not why I was late. I was walking the dog. But yeah, don't do that. That someone did that to me. Someone did that to me. They turned up to one of my sessions, working time.
Yeah.
Half an hour late with like, I said, oh, I'm really sorry. I was, you know, running late.
What's that?
Did you bring me a coffee?
Yeah, you see the coffee.
You know?
In the hand,
and they were like, yeah, well, that's priorities, right? And I actually did turn around and say to this young person, is that how you're gonna approach your job search, your next job interview?
Yeah, because they need to understand that the potential employer is going to be going, hold on, you're late, and I see a coffee.
Oh, you just won't get a look in. They're just, it's just a no-go. Like, you've failed. Yeah. Unless there's like an absolute reason. I was involved in a car accident. I stopped and, you know, but rocking up to your job interview with a coffee and being late for it is like, boom. Yeah.
Down that coffee in the car and leave it in the car.
Don't drink. You're getting on the way home.
Yeah, that's right. Do it on the way home. So we've been talking to Natalie and you talked about the service. The service is still going. The government providing free
career guidance, which is provided by trained and qualified career professionals from Invercargill to Cape Reinga. It can be done face-to-face in lots and lots of different places. It can be over the telephone and, you know, accessing those remote video calls.
Or it can be in Dinsdale.
In Dinsdale. But we also have a service that runs in Hamilton East. You do not have to be unemployed to access our service.
Okay.
We work with all New Zealanders employed and you know, not working. And it is free. There's no limit to the support you get. So it's not like initially it was 3 hours.
Yeah.
And after the 2 years, it's been established that we work to the success of the client, and the, obviously the client being the person that is making the career transition.
Yeah. Well, another 5 minutes, you might have like succeeded. So.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, you know, it honestly, like, it is, the statistics speak for themselves. And if you go onto the Careers Inside website, you can find the report. The project itself over the last 2 years has worked with nearly 20,000 New Zealanders. And I cannot advocate enough. The people that work in the service have been in the profession for over 10 years. They have a standard of education and training to achieve. Like, it is epic.
Mm.
I really strongly suggest anyone that's thinking about applying for a job, unhappy in their job, just wants to update their CV, whatever it might be, really think about reaching out. You can find the number on the Careers NZ website. I cannot remember it because they recently changed it, and so sorry.
That's all right. Careers NZ, look that up.
Look it up. Yeah. If not, just you can contact me directly through Facebook or my business career tree, and I can help you out. You don't have to work with me. That's absolutely fine.
Natalie Sims with two S's.
S-I-M-S.
S-I-M-S. Thank you very much for coming in, Natalie.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Alrighty. Time for us to go, folks. We've gone a little bit over, but never mind. That's all good. I will see you on Monday.